This is the Middle East Report, your connection to truthful reporting on Israel and the Middle East. I'm John Riley. Each week, we give you a perspective of what's happening in the land of Israel and the Middle East. We try to connect you to the people, places, and geography of what's happening in that region of the world so you can pray more, so you can be informed. And today, we are going to go directly to the land of Israel and talk to a dear friend of mine. I've known him for many, many years, Rabbi Pesach Wilicki. He is an author. He is the host of the Shoulder to Shoulder podcast. He is a columnist for the Jerusalem Post. He is with Israel365news.com. He is doing a lot. Pesach, it is good to have you with us today here on the Middle East Report, and good to talk to you. It's been a while.
It has been a while, John. Always a pleasure to be with you and with your esteemed audience.
Well, we have so much to talk about. Obviously, we are going to talk about the election that just took place now. Of course, we've got President-elect Donald Trump set to take office in January. But before we get to that, I want to ask you how you and your family are doing there in Israel. Obviously, there's an ongoing war. You're being attacked from Iran. You're being attacked from Yemen. You're being attacked from the Houthis. I mean, you've got stuff going on in Judea and Samaria. You got a lot going on. So tell me how your family's doing. Tell me, you know, your perspective on what's going on with the war there in Israel.
Well, John, thank you for asking about my family. Thank God we're doing well. Throughout this war, I have had children, including my son-in-law as well, who have been in and out of combat at various times. At times, upwards of four of my children were in the combat zone. Right now, I have a son who's been fighting in Gaza. I have another son who just finished officer's training, and he's going to be training up a group of soldiers, and they're going to be going back into combat soon as well, as soon as they're done with their training. So it's our life has been consumed by the war, by this existential fight that Israel's involved in. Just this morning, we had to spend some time in the bomb shelter because some air raid sirens went off, and it's become kind of, you know, part of normal life here. But at the same time, John, there's a sense of anxiety because we're fighting a war, and sadness because of all of the deaths in my own community. About half a dozen young men have been killed on the battlefield already. A number of them, kids that I watch grow up, children of friends of mine. It's been a difficult year, but there is a sense of optimism. We know at this point what we didn't know a year ago, and that is that we are winning and we are defeating our enemies. Obviously, we have to go all the way. We have to get it done so that they cannot, if you pull out a weed from the top and you don't get the roots, it grows back. So we have work to do here. But for anyone who's been paying attention to what's going on in the Middle East, we know that Israel is winning the war. If only the world, and specifically the Biden administration, would take the handcuffs off, we would have an easier time going all the way and really finishing the job, and it would be better for everyone on both sides.
Well, coming up in January, hopefully those handcuffs are going to be taken off with the new administration, with President-elect Donald Trump, and I'm glad to hear that your family is okay. And I just want to ask everybody to pray for, you know, your family and to pray for everybody there in Israel, because you guys have been going through great trauma. You got pressure from the world to try to end this war without achieving total victory. So you got a lot on the table right now. So we just want to ask everybody to pray for everything that's going on there in the land of Israel. We want to talk, of course, here at the top of this Middle East Report, Pesach, about the earth-shattering election that took place here in the United States with now President-elect Donald Trump. It was a landslide victory for the president, and you are there in Israel. You keep tabs on what's happening in politics, not only there in Israel, but here in the United States as well. I want you just to go at it and give us your perspective on what you see with what happened on Election Day.
Well, first of all, I was heartened by the results, and of course, I'm thrilled that Donald Trump got elected. The overwhelming majority of Israelis were hoping that Donald Trump would get elected. And just to share the statistics with you, about a week before the election, there was a poll published by Channel 12 in Israel. Now, Channel 12 is the equivalent in Israel to what you have as like MSNBC or CNN. It's not a right-wing outlet. It's a very mainstream, left-leaning media outlet, a major news outlet, and they came out with a poll that showed that 66% of Israelis wanted Donald Trump, preferred Donald Trump to win the election. Let's bear in mind that that polling included all of the Arab minority in Israel. 20% of Israeli citizens are an Arab minority, and a significant portion of that Arab minority are not pro-Israel, and they would not have been wanting Donald Trump to come back in. So if you look at that poll, that 66%, if you're looking at Jewish Israel, it's even a much higher number. So in the community that I live in here in Israel, there was a lot of joy, a lot of celebration for the victory of Donald Trump. But what heartened me most was the fact that the popular vote was such an overwhelming victory. Because one of the questions that's been in the mind of a lot of Israelis since the beginning of this war, as the Biden administration has made life somewhat difficult for Israel and has been continuing to push destructive policies like the push for a Palestinian state, and has seemingly been doing everything they can to prevent Hamas and Hezbollah from getting destroyed and preventing the Iranian regime from being toppled, which would bring, you know, freedom and peace and prosperity to the whole region. During that time, one question in the minds of Israelis is, where are the American people? What side are they on? Because we don't, you know, being across the ocean, we don't hear the voice of the American people so much. We hear what comes out of the media, and we see pictures on TV of demonstrations on college campuses, anti-Israel crowds, and we don't see anything similar on the positive side. I'm always reassuring people in Israel, as someone who travels extensively in the U.S. and I spend a lot of time making appearances, speaking publicly and appearing in media in the United States, I'm always reassuring people that the American people are on the right side of things. And the fact that the left, which has become more and more anti-Israel, suffered a resounding defeat in the popular vote really shows that the majority of Americans are still thinking clearly about many issues, one of them being Israel.
You mentioned over 60% of the people there in Israel, you know, really for Donald Trump. Why is that? What is it about Donald Trump that they like or wanted to see him elected?
Well, it's actually pretty straightforward. Donald Trump was the greatest president for Israel in history. During the 4 years of the Trump administration, Israel was safer, more secure, and on the road to greater prosperity and greater relations with our Arab neighbors than ever in our history. In the entire history of Israel, from 1948 till today, the 3 years, year over year, with the fewest casualties from terrorism are the last 3 years of the Trump administration, 2018, 2019, and 2020, because Donald Trump put strong sanctions on Iran that caused Iran to not be able to sell their oil. They were on the verge of bankruptcy by the time Trump left office. The Iranian regime was on the verge of falling. That meant that Hamas and Hezbollah were not getting the funding that they needed to carry out their terrorism. The Palestinian Authority, which continues ever since its inception and continues to this day to pay cash stipends, monthly stipends to the families of terrorist murderers. If someone murders an Israeli, they get rewarded by the Palestinian Authority. And Donald Trump enforced a law called the Taylor Force Act, which prohibits the United States from giving any funding to the Palestinian Authority so long as they continue to fund terrorist families. By the way, the Biden administration is in violation of that law, and they're being sued for it, but they're still violating it. But because of that, there was a disincentive for terrorism. The Abraham Accords, which were these historic peace accords between Israel and a number of Muslim Arab nations, brought greater stability and greater peace to the region, greater economic engagement with our Arab neighbors. He knocked out Qasem Soleimani, the head of the Iranian regime's military, the arch terrorist. He destroyed ISIS. The Middle East was moving towards greater peace, prosperity, and stability than ever in its history under Donald Trump, and Israelis remember that well. But that said, John, the day before October 7th, or even in the opening weeks of this war, if you had polled Israelis, you wouldn't have had 66% saying they want Donald Trump back. It would have been somewhat lower. I believe it still would have been a majority, but it wouldn't have been quite that high. And that's because a lot of Israelis still believed that there was bipartisan support for Israel and that the Biden administration would be just fine. And in the early days of the war, when they sent an aircraft carrier into the Mediterranean and they were sending weapons, a lot of Israelis were heartened. But I wrote an op-ed at the time, about 4 days into the war, I think on October 11th, I published it, where I warned my fellow Israelis, and I got some heat for this. Some people were saying that why was I being a naysayer? A lot of people were very happy. Joe Biden had just made a speech talking about how much he loved Israel. But I was warning everyone that the policies of the Biden administration are what got us into this mess. They empowered Iran. They refunded the terrorists. And I also predicted, unfortunately correctly, that because of all this U.S. aid to Israel, the U.S. would start meddling in Israel's strategic decision-making, and that would cause Israel problems. And sure enough, throughout this war, the United States has been on the one hand slowing Israel down, telling us not to go into Rafah, telling us not to go into Lebanon, telling us not to do this and not to do that, but at the same time saying that the war is dragging on too long and we need a ceasefire. If you add it all up, they've really been trying to save Hamas and Hezbollah from destruction. They've been tying Israel's hands. As the war has gone on, Israelis are smart people. More and more Israelis have woken up to the fact that unfortunately this is not the Democrats of the Clinton era or of John F. Kennedy. This progressive new Democratic Party, which really began with Obama, is just sliding towards greater and greater antagonism for Israel. More and more Israelis have felt that squeeze, and have woken up to the fact that we really do need Donald Trump's policies back governing the Middle East.
You know, that is a fascinating view, and it's not just a view, it is what's happened there in Israel, Pesach. How you describe that is absolutely incredible. You talk about, you know, bipartisan support that has just completely vanished, in my opinion, when you look at what the Democrats have done and what the Biden administration has done to handcuff Israel. It is shameful to do that for our ally. And all along, I really looked at it with how they were treating Israel as like, yeah, you want Hamas to win, just like you said. And so it's just absolutely tragic. And now we still have Biden in office. Are you concerned at all that Biden could kind of twist things up just a little bit and maybe do some things that might not be good for Israel? What's your opinion on that?
Oh, I'm extremely concerned, and it's not just opinion. Let's just take a look at what the State Department is doing right now. But before I get to what the State Department is doing right now, John, if we go back to 2016, during the transition between the Obama and Trump administration, so December of 2016, it's after the election, Trump has won, and Barack Obama basically stabbed Israel in the back. There was a UN Security Council resolution, Resolution 2334, towards the end of December in 2016, which called all the Jewish towns, what are called the settlements, all of the Jewish cities and towns in Judea and Samaria, including East Jerusalem, including the Temple Mount, including the Old City of Jerusalem, it called it all occupied Palestinian territory, which is not, I don't want to get into the weeds of why that's a historically inaccurate term. The simple answer is there was never a nation called Palestine. You can't have Palestinian territory that's occupied if there was never a Palestinian nation. It's basically a falsehood, but it was meant to demonize Israel and refer to all of our settlement activity, including Jews living in the Old City of Jerusalem as they have since Temple times, calling that illegal. And generally, when there are anti-Israel resolutions in the UN Security Council, the United States traditionally has always vetoed them because of their alliance with Israel. And Barack Obama broke with that very firm tradition, and he ordered his UN ambassador to abstain, the American delegation to abstain, and he allowed that resolution to pass. And it really caused Israel a lot of diplomatic problems and problems with some of these international legal bodies. So I'm worried about the same thing happening. And like I said, if you just take a look at what the State Department's doing right now, just about a week and a half ago, Lloyd Austin, the Secretary of Defense, sent a memo that the State Department was also, it came from the State Department and the Defense Department, calling on Israel to give a report on how much humanitarian aid they're allowing in and to increase the humanitarian aid they're allowing in. to parts of Gaza where Hamas is still in control. Now, back in February, Joe Biden signed an executive order. He signed a national security memorandum called NSM 20, which, without naming Israel specifically, it's clearly about Israel. And it says that if in reporting how weapons were used and in reporting how much humanitarian aid has been allowed in to areas that the United States wants it to get to, if the Secretary of State or the Secretary of Defense feel that a country receiving aid from America has not complied with America's wishes, then it could trigger an arms embargo against that country. To make a long story short, they are threatening Israel with complete cutoff of weapons for the next few months, and we need constant supply of weapons fighting this existential war. They're threatening to cut off weapons from Israel if Israel does not continue to flood the zone with humanitarian aid into areas that Hamas still controls. Let's understand something. Throughout this, if Israel was only giving humanitarian aid in areas that Hamas does not control, which is what we want to do, Hamas would get starved out. They would no longer have resources, because what they do is they take the humanitarian aid and they sell it. They don't just give it out. They sell it at exorbitant prices to the people in Gaza. We should also remember that a lot of the humanitarian aid, isn't just like, you know, people picture it like being like sandwiches and medicines. There's also a lot of fuel there. All of the fuel gets commandeered by Hamas themselves. Essentially, when you hear about the humanitarian aid going into Gaza, we're essentially resupplying Hamas. We're giving them cash flow. We're giving them energy. And it's keeping the war going longer. It's empowering Hamas, and the United States and Israel has wanted to implement a plan where humanitarian aid is available only in areas that Hamas no longer controls, so we can wipe out Hamas without resupplying them. And the Biden administration is actively trying to thwart that and forcing Israel to allow humanitarian aid into Hamas, or they will cut off all weapons. That's happening right now. Israel is supposed to deliver a report back to the State Department sometime. I don't know if it's going to be this week or next week, but I'm watching this very closely, and it's very worrisome.
The Biden administration has been the worst administration, in my opinion, in the history towards the Jewish people. There is no doubt about that, but let's hope that they don't do any of the things that you described to Israel, our greatest ally there in the Middle East. It is as tragic what the Biden administration has done. They're going to be gone soon, thank the Lord, and a brand new, you know, administration taking place, which leads me to ask you, how do you see this new Trump administration? Is he going to do things different? Are there some new things maybe that you think are going to happen? How do you see the Trump administration when it comes to things going on there in Israel? I've heard Trump talking to Netanyahu saying, hey, you need to end this war, get it over with. You know, some of the same things maybe we've heard from Biden. Maybe I'm wrong on that, but how do you see things with the Trump administration?
Well, when people hear Donald Trump say that Israel needs to end this war and they only listen to that top line sentence, they're missing what he actually says. What he's been saying is that he wants Israel to end this war by winning it quickly, destroy the enemy. I'm looking forward to the Trump administration coming back in. I don't know who Secretary of State is going to be. He has not yet announced who the ambassador is going to be, if it's going to be a return to Ambassador Friedman or if it's going to be someone else. And of course, as Ronald Reagan always said, personnel is policy. We need to see the people. But what I'm looking forward to most, and what I think is the greatest reason for hope in the Middle East, is simply the way that Donald Trump thinks about how to achieve peace. His policies, the term he used for them, was peace through strength, which on the surface, people sometimes think of it only as just like, you know, you throw your weight around by being tough on the bad guys, and that's the road to peace, which is only partially true. Peace through strength does not only mean destroying ISIS, killing Soleimani, sanctioning Iran, cutting off aid to the Palestinian Authority who funds terrorism. It also means strengthening. Peace through strength also means strengthening the good actors, strengthening your allies and those who want to be your friends. So when Donald Trump was elected president, the first trip he made abroad as president of the United States, he went to Saudi Arabia and he gave a speech in Saudi Arabia about the potential for peace among the Arab countries and Israel. And that laid the predicate at the beginning of his administration for what came near the end of it. It laid the predicate for the Abraham Accords. And what did he do with the Abraham Accords? He rewarded those countries that seek peaceful engagement and reform, peaceful engagement with the West and with Israel, and willing to reform and to combat the bad elements in the Middle East. So the Emiratis, the Saudis weren't in the Abraham Accords, but they were going to be. But the other countries that joined the Abraham Accords, Bahrain, they want peaceful engagement. They outlaw the Muslim Brotherhood, which is the parent organization of Hamas. And Donald Trump rewarded them for this. That peace through strength policy really worked. We saw that the Middle East was moving towards greater and greater peace. And John, let me just, I want to clear a lot of the fog away from what's going on in the Middle East. And for people who follow it, just, you know, they catch it on the news, they read some things. I want to simplify everything. There is only one problem in the Middle East. And that problem is Iran. Hamas is a proxy of Iran. Hezbollah is a proxy of Iran. The Houthis are a proxy of Iran. Whenever you hear people in the Biden administration or in the media talking about the fears of a wider regional conflict, we've all heard that phrase, fears of a wider or expanded regional conflict. It's, for lack of a better term, John, a bunch of baloney. Because we are already in the conflict as wide as it can be. If we're at war with Iran and with Iran's proxies, Hezbollah, Hamas, the Houthis, and of course, Iran's proxies in Syria and in northern Iraq, but they're all Iranian proxies. If the Iranian regime would fall, and everyone and your listeners must understand, it's the Iranian regime that's a problem. The Iranian people are actually the most Western of all the people in this area. They're actually, as a population, very pro-Israel. They want to be liberated from this terrible Islamic regime. You see pictures of them in the street wearing the Islamic dress and the burqas because they're forced to by law, but they're actually a very low percentage of mosque attendance, but they're just forced to live that way. If we were to bring down the Iranian regime, John, that would mean no more Hamas, no more Hezbollah, no more Houthis, no more bad actors in northern Syria and Iraq, and the power bases in the Middle East would shift entirely over to those Arab and Muslim countries who seek peaceful engagement with the West. The Saudis, the Emiratis, and those actors would suddenly become the only major players in the Middle East. Iran would quickly become a peaceful, somewhat Western country in this area. Lebanon would become a peaceful, somewhat Western country as it was before the 1980s, before the terrorists took over there. The path to a peaceful Middle East runs through destroying the Iranian regime and bringing it down. And Prime Minister Netanyahu put out a statement the other day, about 2 days ago, saying that he spoke a number of times to President-elect Trump since the election. And he added in, he didn't give details except one sentence. He said, "We see eye to eye on the Iranian threat." And that gave me great hope that maybe we will be able to change things for the better for decades to come. And maybe America will have Israel's back in taking down the Iranian regime. That's my hope going forward. Again, what gives me optimism is that Donald Trump's whole approach to the Middle East worked.
We're talking to Rabbi Pesach Walicki, one of the most articulate voices there in the Middle East when it comes to everything going on there, especially in the political realm. He's an author, host of the Shoulder to Shoulder podcast, columnist for the Jerusalem Post, and of course with Israel365news.com. In the final moments here that we have, I want to give you an opportunity to just tell us a little bit more about your Shoulder to Shoulder podcast, let people know how they can hear that, and maybe a little bit more about Israel 365 News, what you guys do there.
Yeah, thank you, John. So the Shoulder to Shoulder podcast, I co-host it with Pastor Doug Reed. He's a pastor of a church up in upstate New York, and it's been going for about 3 years. It's a weekly podcast. You can catch it on any podcast platform. It's a pastor and a rabbi, and we bring on guests. Most of the time we have guests. Sometimes it's just the two of us, and we talk about all kinds of issues that matter to people of faith. Since October 7th, a lot of it has had to do with the war in Israel. So you get a lot of good coverage of the war in Israel there, but a lot of conversations just about issues of faith, journeys of faith in our lives, issues that people of faith on both sides, Christian and Jew, are facing. So please check it out. You can find it on any podcast platform. And Israel 365 is a leading organization on the Jewish side of the Jewish-Christian relationship. We have a news website, Israel365news.com, but you could also go to Israel365.com. And we have educational material, and we have and there's books from Israel and items from Israel that you can see there. And there's also a YouTube channel, Israel365, where you can catch a lot of the material I put out. And there's a series of Ask the Rabbi videos I've been making. You can check those out there. So Israel 365 is a tremendous resource for people who want to remain engaged with Israel. You can go there and sign up for the newsletter, and you'll get news updates from a biblical perspective. So yeah, please check out Israel365news.com and Israel365.com, whichever one of those you remember better as you're listening to this. Please check out the Shoulder to Shoulder podcast.
A lot of great resources. I encourage you to check out all those resources that Rabbi Pesach Wilecki shared. And Pesach actually speaks all across the United States, and he is one of the, in my opinion, one of the best people out there that has just bridged this gap between the Jewish people and Christians. And Pesach, I really thank you for your work and what you have done to bridge that gap. I thank you for your work that you do there in Israel, and of course, when you come to the United States, we really appreciate this relationship that we have with you, and I encourage everybody to contact you, get a hold of what you're doing there. And again, I just want to ask everybody to pray for your family, pray for Israel, that there will be a decisive victory in all of these wars very, very soon.
Amen. Amen, John. And if anyone wants to contact me, just Pesach, my first name, P-E-S-A-C-H, at Israel365.com.
I encourage you to do that as well. As we think about this most recently concluded election with President-elect Trump now set to take office in January, I want to encourage you to please pray for the president, pray for wisdom, please pray for all those that he's selecting to be a part of his newly formed government when he takes office in January. We as believers have a responsibility to do that. We can't just sit back here and say, well, the next 4 years are going to be absolutely fantastic. And I pray that they are. But when it comes to things here in our country, and especially our relationship with the land of Israel, we have got to be praying for President Trump and all those that will be surrounding him during his time in office beginning in January. So please remember to do that. There, of course, has been several attempts on his life. He needs our prayer for protection and wisdom. That's the Middle East Report. I want to thank you for listening today. I'm John Riley. You can get a podcast of the show wherever you get your podcast, or you can go to afr.net.